Charmaine Curtis is going to the facilities committee. And actually, that wasn't my comment. My comment was that since Charmaine was hired, my comment was that I am surprised to hear the person from SFMTA say that Charmaine Curtis is going to be the liaison between the facilities committee and SFMTA and the agencies. And what I said was she had not been to 8 meetings where they discussed Balboa Reservoir. That was what I said, that they had discussed. I didn't say I'm happy she's going. Thank you.
Okay. Any other?
On the general comment, Laura, Westwood Park. It said, the note under me, it said the plan diverges from the parameters on height. And that's true, but I was more specific about that, that the parameters said 25 feet to 65 feet, and that it was going to gradually go down, taper. And the heights on the plan go up to like 55, like within a third from west to east. So that is not a tapering, it's like ba-boom. And that affects not only changing the heights, but the density that the parameters, if they were followed, would have implied.
So what's your change exactly?
So the change is that there's a change in height and density. The height has been changed, but also because it's not tapering, it goes high very quickly. It's not tapering. So that affects the density a lot.
Any other changes to the minutes? Okay, none? Need a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
A second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, unanimous. Okay. Welcome, Maurice Rivers. All right. The first thing on the agenda is the environmental review update. Oh, I'm sorry. I am sorry, yes, of course. The City College of San Francisco master plan, do you have an update on that?
Good evening, everyone. I'm going to give you an update on the facilities master plan and the progress and where we are in the re-engagement process. Since May, we have been working on the re-engagement process. One of the things that we decided to do was to re-engage the campus community with the process and figuring out exactly what their input is. We didn't really have a lot of documentation on what that input was. We just had some notes, but it really didn't speak to how the spaces needed to, what the teaching and learning spaces were going to be, the size of those spaces, program review, and what went into the thought process behind the development of the first few iterations of a site plan. So what we've done is we decided to go back to the constituents, all of the stakeholders, and we've been conducting workshops. And so we have several workshops. We've had, I want to say, 4 workshops completed thus far, and we've met with several different groups. For example, in September we met with student development. First week of October we had a career technical and education workshop. We also had science, technology, engineering, and math. And then next week we have 3 other workshops as well. And so what we're doing with these workshops is we're taking those notes. We're actually bringing them back to the campus community to make sure that we've verified what we've heard and what the faculty, staff, and the students have shared with us, as well as the administrators. And then we're going to bring that back to our facilities committee for a final review of those of what came out of those meetings, and then we'll make a recommendation to the PGC as well as the president's the chancellor's cabinet, and then hopefully we can get back to the board with a recommendation in February. So November we also have two more workshops. We're actually going to invite the community out for a workshop right here in this room. I'm hoping on November 5th, but I will confirm the date. I will confirm the time and the location. We're looking at from 6 to 7:30 for a public forum to share with you what where we've come so far, and we'll bring that to you. And I will confirm what date that is. Thank you. I'm sorry, what room that is. Thank you.
I neglected to properly introduce Amy to the Amy O'Hara to the committee. Did you want to say anything to introduce yourself? Okay. She represents Sunnyside, so the neighborhood to the south. And also, Supervisor Yee, did you want to get a few words in before we go on the agenda?
Did you say no? I guess he said yes.
Yes.
I guess you said yes. I didn't hear what you said. Oh. I thought you said no. I was like, all right, right on. No talking.
Yes.
Damn.
Good evening. Thanks for allowing me to have a few words back into your agenda. First, I think I want to congratulate John Winston. I think, is this your first meeting as a chair? First of many, I'm sure. And thanks for stepping up. And I also wanted to welcome Amy, hi, from Sunnyside for joining this, the CAC, and also stepping up for your neighborhood. And tonight, I want to just mention tonight, that the city team and the developers and so forth, I want to thank them for actually having this discussion. I know that what's going to be discussed today is more of a process rather than any decisions, and the important meeting to go in terms of the CEQA or environment impact study discussion is later on in the month. I think it's on the 30th. On the 30th, and hopefully many of you can, or all of you can actually attend that meeting where your input will be taken directly. So I just want to say that I know that the sort of draft study that is intended has been out now, and I noticed what's on there, and I want to make some comments about that. I won't necessarily be able to go to the 30th, so hopefully, since this could be recorded, it could be somewhat official from that it's coming from my point of view. I have to say that I noticed that the notice preparation for the scoping, that's what it's called, was released last weekend. There's really two versions of the project to be studied. One of the numbers of the units was really proposed by the developer. I forget the exact number, but it was about 11,000. And then another one of a higher number, which is common in a study, so that you could look at some of the possibilities at a higher number of units. I think that was 1,500 or so. Is that right? Okay. Yeah. And then, but ultimately, the number of units will be decided, not necessarily by the ERR, but at a later time, with a much more robust discussion. But I believe that this study should be a little bit more comprehensive to me, and should include what we have heard from community members, especially from the beginning, that maybe we really should look at not only a higher number, but if we're going to be comprehensive about this, to look at maybe some lower number, whatever it is, just in case, once again, we don't know what the impact is going to be. It could be very little, it could be a lot. And if it's a lot, then do you just stop the project because it's a lot and it's too expensive to let's say you're only thinking about 1,500 and it costs you $1 billion to mitigate everything, this is ridiculous. Well, then do you stop it or do you look at a lower number? And for me, I feel like we've been discussing all kinds of numbers, and so it seems that people will be a lot more supportive if we see a third number, not just the 1115, but some lower number below 1100, which we have talked about, so we can look at all the numbers later. I mean, especially the developers who has to pay for this, to say, well, you know what, it might make more sense to do a certain number of units because the mitigation wouldn't be as expensive. So that's really the only comment I want to make about this, because all along we've been talking about numbers and we don't know exactly where we're going to land yet. And I want to make sure that I'm being very transparent to in my thinking that we're still open to the numbers. And I want the committee has been pretty patient about that. And I want to make sure that they're always going to be weighed in terms of their comments. So that's the main thing I want to say about that. And I do really appreciate this meeting having the opportunity to actually understand the process, because it's something that most people that attend these meetings are probably more like me, where it's like, what are you talking about? You have CEQA, EIRs, and so forth. So this is an opportunity to really learn more about the process. And hopefully, when you go to the meeting on the 30th, you'll be a little more informed about what it is and what's the possibilities and so forth. So I want to thank you for the time again, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, so this is an environmental review update. We're talking about just the outline of what's going to be happening at the October 30th meeting. So here we go.
Just a quick context. I'm Jeremy Shaw from the Planning Department tonight. Josh Switsky, our Land Use and Housing Program Manager, is going to present a brief overview of the environmental analysis update. But it's basically an overview of the process and what's being studied. As the supervisor mentioned, on October 30th, there will be a much more in-depth meeting about the EIR and the scope. And so the comments at that meeting will be heard. Today is just kind of a little preview. We have Senior Manager Josh here, and then later, the next agenda item will be from the developer team. We'll pause for questions from the CAC after Josh's presentation.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, CAC and the folks. Thanks for having me tonight. Again, my name is Josh Switsky. I'm the Land Use and Housing Program Manager in the Long Range Citywide Planning Division of the Planning Department, where I've been for over 17 years, and actually feels great for me to be here today and excited to see this project starting to move forward. I worked on the original Balboa Park Better Neighborhoods Plan over 15 years ago when this was really just a figment in everybody's imagination. And so it's really gratifying that this is actually something that's happening and hopefully moving forward. Let's see if this works. Oops, wrong one. All right. Sorry. So I'm just going to give you a brief overview of the environmental review process, what's being analyzed, and how you as the public can continue to plug in and participate as it moves forward. So just a few terms. These are acronyms you hear thrown around a lot, and as the supervisor said, it's all very confusing for folks who aren't steeped in this stuff. So just understanding the term CEQA stands for California Environmental Quality Act, EIR, as you know, Environmental Impact Report. The first step of an EIR is an NOP, or a Notice of Preparation. That's what was published last week. That basically signals that the EIR process is starting and lays out the basic parameters of what is going to be analyzed. And then the term DEIR, draft EIR, and that's the first draft of the Environmental Impact Report, which is published in a number of months. So here's the schedule. I believe you've seen this many times before. Again, the orange, every time you see orange, that's sort of public participation. So you can see that the CAC meetings in this process will continue on throughout the entire process as the The project is being refined and the EIR is coming out, and then later on in the process there's specific opportunities to weigh in and comment on the EIR, and then later on through adoption. We expect that the draft EIR document will be published next summer or fall. And at that point, there's a formal comment period on the EIR where you can comment on the analysis that was done. And then after that, there's a period where the consultants and the department respond to those comments in revising the EIR before it's certified. That's the final action to close the EIR process that the Planning Commission takes at the end to certify that the EIR is complete and adequate and analyzed the project in its totality. So again, the purpose of environmental review is to analyze the potential physical environmental impacts of a project and analyze a wide range of topics, and I'll just put those up in a second. And it's also to identify potential measures that are called mitigation measures to reduce any potential physical environmental impacts that the project might have, as well as to identify and analyze alternatives to the project if there are alternatives that would reduce or eliminate potential impacts. So here's just a very wide range of topics that are covered by EIRs. I'm not going to list all of them, but they include things that you know and love well, like transportation, air quality, wind, public services, geology and soils, water, hazardous materials, the whole range of things that are related to the environment, the physical environment. What an EIR does not do, and what the CEQA process is not for, is for making project decisions in terms of approving a project. Certifying an EIR and finalizing an EIR is not approving a project. An EIR is an informational document to inform decision makers about making decisions about a project so that they are fully informed about the potential impacts of a project. An EIR, and you'll see when it's published, does not debate the merits of the project. Is this a good project? Are the impacts worth it? And so on and so forth. That's not the purpose of an EIR. That's for decision makers like the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors to weigh when they're making their decisions. The EIR is there to provide information about what potential impacts might or might not occur if the project is approved and built. Another thing that an EIR does not do is analyze things that are not physical environmental impacts. So it does not analyze economic impacts, social impacts, demographic impacts. Those are maybe important policy considerations, but they are outside the context of CEQA and of environmental review. So that's just very important to consider, because we often get in these discussions about what an EIR doesn't analyze. So what is being analyzed in this EIR? As discussed and presented in the NOP that was published last week, and I'll talk over the details in just a second of these different scenarios. So there's five different scenarios, essentially what are called variants, that are being analyzed in the EIR. And they all have all the fundamentals in common. The site plan essentially looks more or less identical. They all have smaller buildings, smaller townhouse buildings along the western side of the site, up against Westwood Park. They all have the same open space program and open space layout. They essentially have the same street network and connections to the neighborhood. They all assume the same 50% affordable housing. So the basic sort of base scenario that's being analyzed is what the developer has proposed. And again, the graphic's on the right, and I presume that you're all familiar with that. The developer did submit a range of units. The EIR will be analyzing, as the base project, 1,100 units as the sort of preferred project that is proposed at the moment. That does include a public parking garage on the southern part of the site under what is shown as blocks A and B, in addition to the residential parking. I believe you're all familiar with that layout. So that's the basic layout of the basic proposal. The first variant that's being analyzed, just called variant one, nothing changes except the location of that garage at the southern end. Instead of being underground, is above ground, and sort of embedded in the above ground portion of those blocks A and B. The next variant shifts the location of that garage from the southern side of the site under blocks A and B to the northern side of the site under a different set of buildings, and slightly repositions the location of the southern street called South Street that's parallel to Ocean Avenue to the south, so a slight change there. The next variant doesn't change anything about the proposed project, except it assumes that bicyclists and pedestrians would not be able to access the reservoir through San Ramon Avenue from Westford Park. That's the only change in that variant. And then the last variant, which you heard about, called the additional housing option, also doesn't change any of the physical parameters in the layout of the site, except it includes more units, up to 1,550 units. You can see the affordable housing number also goes up commensurately. It also assumes that there's no public parking garage on this site, but it assumes, as with the other site or the other variants, that there is parking that would be built on the City College side of the reservoir. And the only physical change that's part of this is the addition of about one story to a number of the blocks on the site. But again, as I said, it doesn't change the fact that there would be low-scale townhomes along the west side of the site. So on the more eastern parts of the site, it would add a story to some of those. So you can see that the height range, instead of 25 to 78 feet, goes to 25 to 88 feet, and that would be spread around the site. And the NOP has a diagram in it, if you want to get into details, to show which of those buildings on the more eastern part of the site would have an additional story on them. So the obvious question I'm sure you're all asking is why this additional housing option. And it's something that we struggle with a lot in thinking about, and we know you've all worked very hard and collaboratively with the city and the sponsors on this project, and have spent a lot of hours, and we really thank you for that. One thing that we have heard loud and clear is the planning department, the mayor's office, and so forth, from a lot of processes and projects that have been discussed at City Hall over the last couple of years, is providing decision makers the latitude to consider more housing than maybe was initially considered. We've heard that on a wide number of projects and been taken to task over the last couple of years about confining decision makers to one fixed number that may not be as ambitious as they might want to consider at the end of the day. And so we've heard that loud and clear and have responded by modestly increasing the housing potential within the same physical parameters of what has you all have come up with and worked with the city and the sponsors to come up with. Again, the scope, you probably all know the scope and scale of the housing crisis that San Francisco and the Bay Area are facing is historic and unprecedented. And like I said, I've been working on plans in this area for close to two decades. This was not the case 15, 20 years ago. And it's something that the city and the region are really grappling with, and opportunities to squeeze a few more units out of some of these sites is something that we ought to at least put on the table for decision makers to consider. And even just looking at just the specifics of this site and its size and its scale and its location, there's a number of other sites of similar size that have been come forward and approved or under consideration in other parts of the city, including in communities of color and disadvantaged locations that are maybe not even as close to transit or other major shopping areas and institutions, where sites of exactly this size have more than 1,500 units, 1,600, 1,700, 1,800 units. And so just as a matter of comparability and equity, it seemed that analyzing something closer to that was an important thing to be able to allow decision makers to consider at the end of the day. And this is, compared to some of those other sites, this one is very close to great regional transit, Uni Metro, and so forth, and this is something that ought to be considered. Again, one thing that's important to remember about the CEQA process is a final project that is less intensive than what's being studied is already automatically covered in the EIR, and so only something that's more than what was proposed could not be covered. So if we did not analyze something up to 1,500 units, that could never be considered by decision makers. Something smaller than 1,100 could be definitely considered by decision makers without necessarily explicitly analyzing it. And as I mentioned, if there are alternatives, different configurations of the project or different amounts of units or what have you, that would reduce or eliminate potential environmental impacts that the EIR might cover, those would also be identified and analyzed in the EIR as required by the law. So that's the basically the land. The when you comment on the EIR or on the NOP, as you are free to do, the what you should think about focusing your comments on is, again, not the merits of the project or whether you do or don't like the proposal, but the purpose of the NOP process is to consider issues related to the methodology of the environmental analysis, how the analysis will be conducted, things about potential mitigation measures that ought to be considered, and basically any information that would help the analysis of environmental impacts, including the suggestions for new alternatives that aren't already being considered in the EIR, as laid out in the NOP. And so again, this meeting today is not a formal meeting where comments will be taken and recorded as comments on the NOP. There's a special meeting that's set up for that purpose. As the supervisor mentioned, it's on Tuesday, October 30th at LIC. And written comments will be accepted by the department until November 12th, either by email or by regular mail. And your comments will be considered, and the EIR could be shaped based on that. So with that concludes my remarks, and I'll hand it over to the CAC. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to do a... We're going to experiment with the CAC commenting first, and then comments from the public. We'll see how that works, and if it doesn't work out, we'll go back to the old pattern. But we'll start, I guess, Christina.
I have a lot of questions. So, let's see, where to start? Maybe I'm not the best person to start with, because I have a whole bunch here. One of the things I just wanted to know, and maybe you can answer this quickly, who am I asking anyway? Am I asking you?
Sure.
Oh, okay, I'm not sure. I didn't see... lead anywhere in here, or the sustainability of the buildings? Are they? Is there anything in the EIR about that? Or should there be? I don't know.
Yeah. So the city has a green building ordinance that sets minimum standards, which includes LEED certification as part of it. There are various topics. Let me go back to that page that has all the topics. So there are various topics which would be, which would take the kind of matters that LEED certification would address into consideration, whether it's water or greenhouse gas emissions or air quality or utilities or things like that. To the extent that buildings are performing better to meet the green building standards that the city has, or if the developer is proposing measures above and beyond what the city requires, then those would be analyzed and would factor into this analysis.
Okay, yeah, because I had thought that was one of our principles and parameters regarding sustainability, and I don't know if it's supposed to be mentioned in the EIR, but I just wanted to bring that up. So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is on page 17, the transportation and circulation plan. It would be the same whether there's the additional housing option or not. The transportation plan that you've included here.
Defer to Jeremy on that question.
On the slide 7? Sorry.
No, I think she's talking about page 17 of the NOP.
Yeah.
Oh, you got a printout.
So the NOP describes at length the scope of the analysis, and so, so in this case, we're looking at this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the the environmental consultants have to do this level of analysis for every option. So the developer's proposed option, the additional housing option, and if any of those variants change some factor, then they have to be analyzed for that factor as well. So yes, is the short
okay.
answer to your question.
So this is the roadmap for what needs to be done.
Studies.
Okay. Okay, and so it would have to. Oh, sorry, I'm taking this. Okay. All right, that clears that up because I wasn't really understanding that. It looked like it was going to be the same transportation. Oh, geez, Acrobat just quit. Okay, well, I'm going to have to go from my notes then.
So just to clarify, Bridget, that doesn't mean that. It means they have to do a plan for all the variants, but one variant might need additional measures, right? So it doesn't mean they'll have the same exact plan. We don't know that yet. So
right.
Makes sense?
No, that makes sense, and that's what I wanted to know. That's exactly what I wanted to know. And then, so not every option is in there either because it's about to be studied. Is that correct? So there could be a lot of different options for a circulation plan for transit. Like I noticed shuttles were mentioned at all, and that would be one of the things that we're.
Yeah, the NOP hasn't gotten into any of the proposed.
Okay, all right. That's what I'm just clarifying here, and I wanted to make sure. It also didn't discuss any additional parking garage or gator passes. Sorry, ram passes. So all the things that we've talked about in here. We're not in there, and I was just wondering about that, but I see that that's something that would be analyzed as part of looking at this from the perspective of different amounts of units going in. And so let me ask a question about that. So I have a question about the additional number of units, and Supervisor Yi said something about maybe we should look at a lower amount of units if we're going to look at a higher amount of units. And you're saying that that's already included.
It could be explicitly studied, but even if it wasn't, it would be covered by the analysis because it's less development, and so the impacts would be, by definition, less.
Okay. And also regarding that 1550 proposed by the city because of the exigent circumstances now that are prevailing in the city regarding housing and whatever. So I guess I'm wondering, like, how do we know what that's going to look like?
Look like in terms of
physical
buildings?
Well, I mean, we've spent a lot of time discussing how this will look. And will we have to have architects redraw this and look at this again because we've spent a lot of time looking at it?
Yeah, so the NOP has a basic diagram of how the building heights might change on a few blocks. And yes, those could, you know, would be explored, you know, over the coming months to consider how they might look differently, you know, if at all, than the project that's being primarily analyzed and reviewed.
Okay, and I think that's most of them. I think I was just very concerned when I didn't see more about the transit and circulation. And so now that I know that that's something that's going to be analyzed and those different variables that we've all discussed will be included, then that makes me feel a little better.
I had a question regarding the sort of compounding effects of some of City College's plans for housing, for parking garage, for additional buildings on their portion of the reservoir, and how, I mean, it's beyond the scope of the study, right? I mean, you can't consider that, and yet it will.
Well, no, it would be considered to the extent that it's known. Anything that's known anywhere in the city, really, at the time that the EIR starts is considered as part of what's called a cumulative background analysis or background conditions. And so there's the EIR does the sort of the no project, what does everything look like today? What would happen if just this project were built and nothing else happened? you know, around, and then the project plus all the cumulative stuff that's known that will happen in the future, and that would include whatever is known about City College's plans. So that's definitely a baseline thing that is studied in all EIRs. To the extent that it is not known, if City College's plans are just completely unknown, then we can't speculate as to what it may or may not be, but to the extent that they have plans that they've expressed, then they would be considered.
Thank you. Robert Gilmar. A couple of questions here. You were mentioning we've been working on this for decades, and we do have the Balboa Park Station area plan. This project falls within the area plan for Balboa Park Station, and an environmental impact report was prepared for that document. So my question is, we're looking at three housing scenarios. Do those three housing scenarios fall within the accepted parameters of that prior environmental impact report that was prepared for the area plan?
So the short story is this EIR will essentially be updating that analysis with this project and the changes that this project would bring to it. This is actually what's called a subsequent EIR. It's taking the Balboa Park area plan and basically updating it with the parameters of the project as the reservoir project that it is now proposed.
When you say it's updating it because it exceeds the accepted standards in the accepted plan the way it is, or
well, there was
just not quite clear on how these two dovetail together.
Yeah. So the Balboa Park plan analyzed the maximum development program that was conceived at the time, and this EIR is basically building off that and augmenting that analysis to consider the additional development that is now being considered for the reservoir. So it doesn't negate the previous analysis, but it essentially updates those topics which would change as a result of this plan.
My question still remains then. So with the accepted plan for the Balboa Park Station, are these scenarios within that envelope as it stands, or are there anomalies that are requiring this because we're changing it significantly?
Well, if it was wholly within what was analyzed in the original plan, there would be no reason to do an EIR now.
Okay.
It's because it's different and more extensive than what was analyzed in 2002.
My second question, at the Balboa Park Station, there's a proposal for 100, the NOP I think says 136 units, the developer's saying about 117. And transit obviously is going to be a very significant issue with regard to that project as well as this. So I'm just wondering if the impacts on transit, you know, the demand for additional transit and routing and station, well, not even station, but times, you know, when the routes are going to be coming, will that be looked at not only in relation to this project, but folding in the other project that's also within the plan right down the street? And again, it's kind of a discussion about how these two things dovetail in. So that the community, you know, at the end of this report, we have a sense of what's going to happen to our transit with, you know, 15, 16, 2,000 additional people living in our neighborhood.
The answer is yes, it definitely will. But the same story as with City College's plans. Anything that is known, any development or any changes that are known within the area's sphere of influence, which is a fairly wide area, geographic area around here, would be covered and would be included in the cumulative analysis. And transit impacts are definitely one of the main topics of the EIR. Would include transit delay, overcrowding, and those kinds of things.
Thank you, Mike. I remember Balia Cohen at the Land Use Committee asked for this extra option of more housing as part of the study. And my impression at that time was that we were looking at big number, small number, and the preferred number that we've been talking about all along in order to calibrate ourselves, basically. Supervisor Yee mentioned that this will go before the decision makers, and first of all, who are the decision makers? And second of all,
can they at that point say, no, we want to have 1,500 units?
So ultimately, the decision makers for any project like this or rezoning is first the Planning Commission, and then the Board of Supervisors, and ultimately the mayor, of course, has to sign any legislation or develop an agreement. As well, I think there will be, I don't know all the nuts and bolts, there will be other decision makers involved because it's public land and it's PUC land and all those sorts of things, so there's other bodies that will be involved in approving the plans as part of a transactional arrangement. So, the key decision makers are the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors and the mayor. In terms of, ultimately, this is a broad policy discussion and a negotiation with a private partner and city landowner and these decision makers. And by the time we get to the end of the process, there will be a project that can be supported and moved through the process. Does that answer your question?
I think so. Yeah, but the opinions of the people in this room will be.
Of course.
Yeah. They'll have an opportunity to speak during the October 30th meeting by in person and written comments and further on down the line they'll have the options to.
Yes.
Okay. And the other thing was some of these variants show with and without a garage or with different sizes of garages. Is parking considered an environmental impact?
So the nuances of that I probably would have to defer to one of our environmental planners, transportation planners, to tell you exactly how that has worked. But yes, the basic transportation standard for environmental review is vehicle miles traveled, VMT, and so anything that the project does to increase the amount of driving, and that includes the amount of parking, and which is shaped by the amount of parking that's provided, would be analyzed against that standard of vehicle miles traveled.
And congestion, we used to measure congestion by measuring intersections A through F.
That's not the way it's done anymore.
That's what I'm saying.
The state of California adopted a new standard, which is VMT, as a result of state legislation, and so San Francisco has implemented that. So congestion in and of itself is not an environmental impact, but it's actually vehicle miles traveled, which directly correlates with greenhouse gas emissions and air quality and those physical impacts. But circulation also is taken into account when factoring in things like transit delay and impacts to pedestrians and cyclists and things of that nature.
I just wanted to piggyback off what John said. Early in the process, I thought that 1,300 units was the high mark, and now we're at 1,550, I think. So it seems like when it comes to the public comment, the two big things are parking and the number of units. And I just really think it's important that we are sensitive to what the OMI and the Sunnyside and the Westwood Park neighbors want, because they're coming here meeting after meeting and they have the same concerns and they're all very valid. And if we don't listen, especially the developer, if they don't listen to what their concerns are, we're doing them a great disservice. So I feel like if they're saying 1,550 is a lot of units, then that's a very valid concern that should be taken into consideration.
Okay, let's go to the public comment. I'm sure we'll have quite a bit of that. Formal line up. We're going to have 2 minutes each. And what time is it? It's 10 to 7. We're going to give this as much time as we can, but we have other things to on the agenda. And just bear in mind that this is just was an overview of the notice of preparation of the EIR. We're not talking about the EIR itself, and there is a meeting on the notice on the NOP on the 30th. So you'll have plenty of chances to say what you need to say. And if we do go over, we can also table this until the end of the meeting and come back to it then. I want to make sure we have some time for architecture and design. Okay, first speaker, please.
Is this just EIR time?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Marcio Von Mulen. I live nearby in Mission Terrace. I'm here to discuss my support of as much housing as possible in this location. So I'm strongly in favor of the 1,500 units, and in fact, I think we should even have even higher density in this location. I think it's a great location for families like mine. I actually brought my two little boys. They're out in the hallway. They were being loud, sorry. I think that San Francisco should be a home for them in the future as well, much as it is a home for my family today. And I think it's only through allowing the development of high-density buildings, such as the largest unit proposal here, that we can actually make that a reality. So I just wanted to say that there are certainly members of the neighborhood that are in favor of that many units. A lot of us are at work, so we couldn't be here, but that voice is out there in the community as well. Thank you.
And just a quick reminder that the opportunity for formal, we appreciate your comments. Just tonight, the comments that we're here are not formally part of the EIR process. You can do that in any of these three ways. We encourage you to come on October 30th, but we are recording these comments as we do with every CAC meeting.
Jennifer
Hickey
from Sunnyside. I first have two questions. One, is there any evaluation of pedestrian miles traveled that are considered? These are very old neighborhoods with very small sidewalks. Secondly, I have the question, what is the implication region-wide of approving the additional housing option for this project? What are the effects for other neighborhoods in and out of the Balboa Special Use District? So those are my two questions. I have a lot of comments. Some of them I might use in the other comments section. But as we've discussed ad nauseum for at least 3 years, providing a public garage on the Balboa Reservoir is critical for the success of any development project. The additional housing option, which does not include public parking, is unrealistic and will be harmful. It's very important to provide public parking on the Balboa Reservoir as a critical component for achieving City College's educational mission and attendance. Part of that mission is to provide an education to people who are working and need to get to college from work or to work from college. Another part of that mission is to provide parking so student performers and the performance audience feel safe attending and evaluating the packed performances at night. That parking lot is needed to support City College's educational mission. I want to reinforce how important we think it is to have a full 2 acres of continuous open space in a development that is extremely dense and out of character with this neighborhood. Massive buildings are imposing and as a result discourage activation of the space below without additional amenities. They do not encourage community between residents of different socioeconomic backgrounds who will reside in different buildings. Lower buildings with less density encourages interactions at the ground level. 6 to 7 stories next to Reardon is too massive and overwhelming, unless you're an architect named Gary. it will cast shadows on the Reardon sports field, and I'll go on later. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Jonathan Randolph of the Ingleside, now of Visitation Valley. I wanted to follow up on John's question, or re-ask John's question when he asked, who is the decision maker? I actually wanted to know who's the decision maker for the scoping, not of the final project. Is this a political decision, the scoping of the EIR, or is this, you know, a technocratic decision, or what? I know that Supervisor Yee has been asking for low numbers. I remember Malia Cohen's land use testimony. I think she was actually calling for thousands of units. So I think we should actually try analyzing thousands of units, because a lot of people looked at that number, the 500 units number from the previous EIR, and interpreted that to mean that was the previous Bubble Park Station Area Plan's EIR stated that was the maximum capacity of the EIR. I mean, the maximum capacity of the reservoir, when in fact it wasn't. That was just the scoping parameter of the EIR. And I think people are going to look at this EIR and do the same thing. They'll say, you know, 1,300 units is the maximum that the reservoir can support, just because that was the maximum parameter rather than that we got any additional impacts from it. So let's actually look at a high number and see what the actual impacts are. Thank you.
Hi, Chris Hansen, Excelsior. Could you please ask them about the creation of the Balboa Reservoir Special Use District? He didn't talk about that. And how do either of these variances reconcile themselves with the fiscal feasibility and responsibility report that was passed by the Board of Supervisors? We've been talking about that. That plan was passed with the caveat that in going forward, the City College parking issue and its impact on enrollment must be addressed. Instead, these variances have gone in a completely different direction, both in design and cost estimates. I don't understand how the Board of Supervisors can pass a cost estimate that obviously doesn't apply to what is being put up here. The things that we say here tonight kind of don't mean anything, although we are talking, which is good. I urge everyone to go back over the history of this CAC and look at your comments and read what we went over and put that into the permanent record on October 30th. I Xeroxed some things on making CEQA comments that I got from a good planning document on the internet, and if we're out of those, come see me and I will get you copies. Also, Malia Cohen passed that fiscal responsibility report with the caveat that City College's parking and the effect on its enrollment be studied. Thank you.
My name is Rita Evans and I live in the Sunnyside neighborhood. I would like to ask about the variants that we were shown earlier, the four of them. Where exactly did those come from? Who devised them? Who decided that those were the variants that were going to be studied? In particular, I'm very curious about variant number three, no pedestrian or bike access via San Ramon. That seems like such a very, very specific item there. It's interesting that it's the focus of an entire variant. So again, I'd like to know, where did these come from? And is the assumption that there will be no vehicular access under any scenario via San Ramon?
My name is Heather Thiemann. I'm a Westwood Park person. And I have a question to Josh. Who is encompassing the EIR? What kind of people? Who appoints them? And from where are they being hired? Yeah, but I like to know that.
Yeah.
And this is very important for the rest of the audience. We are always speaking past each other. And the only person of the board who really hit it on the nail, and I congratulate you, Morris. Morris Rivers was the only one who represented our neighborhoods. Mr. Yee doesn't represent it. We started with 700 units. It's now more than double. That is not fair. They should make a study for 700 units and 1,100 units. They should include the transportation problem and everything else which had been said here before. We are going around and around for 2 years. We haven't gotten any farther. We are repeating ourselves.
We will answer your questions, but in time. We can't do it tonight, right now. You will get answers to your questions.
So my name is Paul Anderson. I live in Monterey Heights, about a mile from the project, and I would just like to echo the comments of the first speaker that there are many residents that recognize that we're in the midst of a housing crisis, and we should look at maximizing the opportunities we have at this site, which is so unique in its size and access to transportation and location. So I would encourage you to make the EIR as expansive as possible. Thank you.
Steve Martin Pinto, Sunnyside Neighbor Association President. I have a couple concerns here. I know the EIR doesn't address the City College project and their intent to develop, I think, about 500 units right now because it's not known. But I would ask that that be considered because if we don't do that, if we plan in a vacuum and not consider future projects, that future endeavor to develop for City College to add 500 units on their property may be killed because it might be squeezed out by the environmental impact report results of the Balboa Reservoir project. Also, I'd like to ask, is there anybody from SFMTA here right now? Okay, the fact that there's not really concerns me because one of our major concerns is probably our most major concern, traffic and parking. There's not somebody who specializes in that, who's an expert in that, here to hear our concerns and address those concerns. Thank you.
Harry Bernstein, Merced Heights. Several things. The impact of additional housing. I was one of those people who wildly assumed that 500 units was the lid. It's gone to 1,100 now to 1,550, and Ms. Davila and our chancellor have been negotiating with additional housing units and dormitories for students. Maybe they should just get rid of the college because that would make it more possible to have a development. I think that's been the goal all along, something like that. So have to consider it all. Mr. Switzke mentioned that 50% affordable housing is assumed in the EIR. He has fallen into that trap that there's a difference between 50% affordable housing and up to 50% affordable housing. There is a missing 50%. Avalon Bay has made clear that they are not funding that. In fact, in these statements I've seen related to the EIR, they're suggesting that 17% come from public subsidy. I think that's never even come up, and this is a big change. See, I feel that the planning department has facilitated this Balboa Reservoir development. It's been one of its biggest boosters. And then Mr. Rahim, I don't know how his name is pronounced, Mr. John Rahim, is going to be part of the final process for evaluating this EIR. So it just seems too incestuous to me. And again, this 50% affordable housing, a changeable concept, whether it's 50% or up to 50%, affordable to whom?
Alan Mueller, a faculty member at City College for many years. Just a few facts going in. San Francisco itself is more dense than Tokyo. It's more dense than Hong Kong. We are the second most dense city in America, second to New York. We only have one way to go, is up, because we're a peninsula, and up on a major bunch of earthquake faults seems a bit strange. I really don't see why the goal is for San Francisco to become more dense than all of those other people, other cities, peoples. I also challenge that there's a real shortage. In the business section not too long ago in the Chronicle, many of those towers downtown that are supposed to house people are 50% empty, really tall towers. There's a lot of empty units. I happen to have a house that I keep in Bakersfield, and I'm told to keep it off the market so that prices can remain high. And you have that kind of fakey thing which keeps the prices high. I recommend you all look at a video called $1 Million Shack. It's only 23 minutes. And it gives you how we're being manipulated. City College is dense. We are the most dense college. We did the numbers 30-some years ago when the same project was in the air. City College is twice more dense than the next more dense, which is Laney. We're four times more dense. This is acreage per students than all the other colleges in the Bay Area. We're dense. To say that we're going to go into student housing, there's only one other college. It just announced itself down south. Lots of land. Orange County, I believe, Orange Coast. Community colleges don't do this with their land. We have to do, the college has to make real care about its land. We have very little land.
Lauren Fry, Westwood Park. I was concerned in the EIR when he said that the VMT, the vehicle miles traveled, is determined by the amount of parking provided. And that seems sort of manipulative, because just because you don't provide parking to the people coming in doesn't mean they don't have cars. And that's one of the concerns of the neighbors. And it's concerning to me that this EIR is not going to address one of the main concerns, which is people will have cars, there will be no parking in the development, and so they're going to spread out everywhere else. So that VMT should not be just shaped by the amount of parking that's provided by the building. And then my second concern was when Josh says you don't have to do an EIR for a lower number of units because it's automatic. And mathematically, it's only automatic if the 1,100 units automatically passes. Then anything less than 1,100 will automatically be okay. But if you don't make the assumption that 1,100 is going to automatically pass, then mathematically, you have to do something lower to see, well, if 1,100 doesn't pass, maybe 850 will, or 700, or whatever. Thank you.
My name is Max Kahn. I live in the Ingleside. Maurice Rivers. Sorry. Max Kahn, I live in the Ingleside, as Maurice Rivers does. I think it's great that we're looking at 1,550 units. I strongly support that. I hope it gets built. The city and the region are in a dire housing crisis. We can't fix that all by ourselves, but this is something that this community can do, and I think it's completely consistent with the neighborhood and with the character of the neighborhood, especially if we construe that to include the commercial corridor on Ocean Avenue. Thank you.
Monica Collins, Sunnyside. Mother Nature goofed. This obviously was meant to be Los Angeles, and instead we're stuck with this tiny little 7x7 square of land. And so we need to build it to the skies, and people from other neighborhoods need for me to live among Manhattan-like towers for some reason. I mean, they're certainly not affordable. $4,000 for a one-bedroom is ridiculous. And this smacks of ultra-gentrification to me. Ethnic cleansing, bleaching, we've all seen it before. Anyway, I'm a huge booster of City College, where I worked for about a quarter century. And the success of these sometimes desperate students is our success. And when you say transit rich is a bus that requires two transfers and then doesn't stop for you because it's crowded at rush hour, when transit rich means the price of a BART ticket means you have to be rich just to buy it, and that BART, which is on rails, does not run near your community or your neighborhood, or you have two kids in two schools and two jobs in a vocational or educational program, you know, we're telling these people, you don't really matter that much. So, you know, call me a bleeding heart. I know I'm a one-hit wonder like some 80s band. This is my song and I'm going to keep singing it. It's very important. Thank you.
Hello, Corey Smith on behalf of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. Just in regards to how these EIRs were done, it was said earlier by Josh, but I really think it's important to emphasize, we're basically just putting the entire range on everything. For those that are following a situation right now, we're having a conversation in Central SoMa, because these plans take literally a decade to kind of work themselves out. We're in a situation where in Central SoMa, we don't have enough housing because we didn't study enough housing at the beginning. And if we had simply said, well, let's just study more, it would have given us a lot more flexibility. So I do think it's important just to provide us as many options as possible. We're not locking into anything. We're not writing anything in stone. But in 5 years from now, how is the world going to be different? In 10 years? I mean, we've already been doing this I've been coming to these meetings for 3 years with many of you, and the study hasn't even started to be studied yet. We're still talking about the study. So this could take a long time, so I just think the opportunity to give as much flexibility in the future, so we're not boxed into anything, I think is really important. And the other thing, we often, and I know I've probably said this before, talk about units and density as if they're abstract things, but at the end of the day, people like me live in this stuff. I was riding down here with Laura earlier, and a friend of mine who's a fellow housing advocate tweeted out that his building was sold, and he got served an eviction notice today. And he's a housing advocate, and he does not make much money, I guarantee you. I don't know what's going to happen with him. And we're talking about subsidized affordable units. There's going to be middle-income families that are living here. So the difference between 1,500 units and 1,300 units is like 50 families. Hardworking folk that just want to be able to call the city home. So please don't dismiss density in units as if they're nothing. Think about the people that live in them. And when you're making these decisions, just try to empathize what it's like for people that are really struggling to make it in the city and the opportunities that we can provide them. Thank you.
My name is Jerry Behe. I live in Sunnyside. I live really close to City College. And I consider myself kind of a centrist. I work with young people. I have a 16-year-old daughter, and I don't know, you know, I can't imagine when she'll be able to afford to live here. So I get it. This is affecting a lot of people. But at the same time, we've been saying a lot of the same things, and I don't know that there's been enough work. Like, the K has half the capacity as other streetcars. You can't get on a K downtown right now. So yeah, I guess you can get on and hope to get on and, you know, transfer at West Portal. I feel like Ocean Avenue is broken, Phelan is broken, and the K is broken. And it's nice to see the shiny new cars, but we cannot add 1,000, 1,500 new people, and those are units, not people, without really fixing the infrastructure problems we face every day in this neighborhood. And I get if you live a mile away or 2 miles away, you might not think parking is such a big deal. But it's really hard right now for us every single day. And so, you know, other urban colleges, they have parking lots. They go down, they go up. I mean, why are we not solving this very practically? As Jennifer said, people are working multiple jobs. City College is free, it's wonderful, but they need to get in and out quickly. So circulation, broken, parking really needs a better solution than what we are hearing on the table. For goodness sakes, build a garage. And then finally, low-income housing. There are people who get awarded low-income housing and then they sell it at market value. So I hope you're all realizing if we make low-income housing, somebody has got to manage that so that it's low-income in perpetuity. Finally, I really hope we can prioritize the people we need to be safe. First responders, teachers. I don't know if that's legal, but I think it's really important to look at that. Thank you.
Hi, Laura Clark, a renter in San Francisco. And I wanted to make sure that some of the things that were said that just sort of aren't true get addressed. When we say affordable for whom, there's a lot of work that's been done to really help you all understand who this will be affordable to. We have two amazing affordable housing developers who manage the properties around the city and make sure that we maintain them in perpetuity as subsidized affordable housing for needy people. By building additional market rate housing, we get more subsidized affordable housing. So we get both more families coming into our community and more specific specifically low-income families coming into the community. And I think you can talk with any of the affordable housing developers. They will tell you about what it's like managing those buildings around the city and making sure that we are supporting with a lot of wraparound services for the community members who live in those buildings. They're very well maintained and they're full of awesome people. And you can go visit them, in fact. There have been a couple tours of the affordable housing that you can go on and meet these people. Additionally, I think that, like, I am concerned about the speaker who went before me, her 16-year-old kid. Where is she going to live? Because if we don't build housing, we're talking about those people being pushed further and further away. There's jobs and opportunity here. I think a lot of the people who spoke before me got a bite of that apple. They got to buy a home when things weren't so expensive. I am probably not going to get those same opportunities. I'm probably going to be a renter for the rest of my life. I don't see the opportunity to buy a home in the Bay Area right now. And that's why I believe we need to build a lot more housing and make these communities more welcoming places. Small businesses thrive when we build a lot of housing.
Sorry, I'm not a professional lobbyist, so I hope you can hear me. So, just 3.1, first off, why this particular place to build thousands of housing? Why this place for thousands? I don't get. Secondly, somebody incidentally mentioned Hong Kong, Tokyo, that part of the world. Having lived there, you don't want that, trust me. So, not even New York. And, thirdly, I read somewhere, I don't know if it's from Shibra, that there will be San Francisco and a lot of cities are in the top 10 bubble, housing bubble. You know, I'm just reminded, mindful of years ago, when we have same thing, oh, not enough office space, blah, 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 and then there was a, you know. So, and I agree with everybody who says already too dense. We need to not just so focus on this and do it in an intelligent way. Just one more thing. Oh, yeah. I ran into one of the former, what do you call your group, board of trustee of the college at a function, and he asked me about what's happening with the performance center. I won't name him. So, he was very, very involved with the, a lot of the building and also with the new campuses downtown. So he asked me, what about the performance center? I'm not sure I'll raise it. There you go.
Stephen, you already spoke. Could you wait till the next round and get your comments in then? We're going to give the stenographer a short break. Her fingers are pretty cramped by now. So 10 minutes and then we'll get back to the
I two questions.
Sure, I can answer them now.
Thank you, Kushal.
There's food in the back of the, there's a whole bunch of food there for everybody to eat.
That's going to be so. The problem is.
Thank you very much. You're doing a really good job. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John? John, I'm sitting down.
All right, let's all have a seat and get back to work. I want to do a quick lightning round of the committee. If anybody's interested in responding to the last half hour. Seeing none, I just want to also say that there were a lot of questions asked. They're not going to go unanswered. We're going to make sure that you get answered, but it'll probably be online or some other way that you will have answers to your questions. So now we're going to hand over to the developers the design update. And, go ahead. Who's up first?
Good evening. I'm Gary Strang. I'm here with Wendy Mock from GLS Landscape Architecture and also the architectural team, and Major Williams Pollock and Piatok Architects. Too many team members to name right at this moment, so I'm just going to jump in. I'm going to start with we're going to talk about how the master plan has evolved since we met with you last. And I just want to mention that the master plan document is alive. Document. It's constantly evolving. It's not fixed, and we're constantly incorporating comments. And the adjustments that we're talking about tonight do not affect the EIR process. My understanding is that those comments are subtle enough that the EIR process and the scope do not change. So I just for reference, I just want to. Oops, wrong way. There we go. For reference, I just want to point out that this is the master plan that we presented back in April to this group in this room. And since that time, we've had three community meetings which addressed master planning issues. And there was one back in April, which was in the community room that's adjacent to Unity Plaza, where we talked about big overview issues on the site. And then there was a follow-up meeting at the Ingleside Library on June 23rd that focused just on open space issues and programming for the open space. So we have been collecting comments, and there was our most recent community meeting was on site. We had an event called Park Day where the community was invited out to walk the site and get a sense of what it would be to convert this parking lot to open space. So in preparation for Park Day, the development team worked with a park management group, and they painted in green paint the entire extent of the open space onto the asphalt. It's about 2 acres, and we didn't paint the berm, so actually the open space is a little bit bigger than what's pictured here. So this image is taken from Lee Avenue. It's looking to the south. And the gap between the two buildings in the background is the Whole Foods courtyard for context there. So the following day after the open space extent was painted on the ground, the design team, the development team, representatives from the city all met out on the site, community members attended, there was a couple of food trucks, a few musicians, and we continued to collect feedback, and we presented primarily one topic for the community to weigh in on, and that was, what is the ideal shape of the open space? And so on the left, we set up a table, and we have this board there, and we asked the community to comment on the previous open space plan, which is on the left, which has generally an east-west orientation for the open space, compared to a new scheme, which is evolving, which has more of a north-south orientation. So all of this feedback has been kind of rolled together, community feedback, with comments from the city, which we've collected in person and in written form, and many design team meetings. And that feedback has been used to update the master plan. And that's why we are making these changes to the master plan. All the changes are in response to some specific comment or issue, you know, that we have assimilated. So generally, we identified these five main points. I don't want to read them exactly, but we were really addressing the connection from Sunnyside neighborhood to the north, to Ocean Avenue for pedestrians. That's a big one. We're looking at environmental factors. The city has asked us, and we completely agree, that the park should be activated with ground floor uses in the buildings. We're looking at building and block configurations. And we're really just responding to the context and refining the relationship to Westwood Park and to City College. So going back to our very, very first meeting with the CAC, we presented a concept, which was that there are access points to the site where you can enter, where streets intersect the site. And if you were to connect those access points together, that would define the most natural pedestrian flows through the property. And at the convergence of those pedestrian pathways, there would be a primary open space, which is in the middle, more or less, and that the building forms would emerge from that. So we have changed the diagram a little bit. We've adjusted, but the concept remains exactly the same. So we're going forward with the things that we presented initially. And in our initial RFP response, this is the rendering from our very first scheme, before we had any community or city feedback, we had a very strong east-west axis going through the site, which connected City College to Westwood Park. And since that time, we have engaged with City College, and we have a better idea of what's going on with the master plan there. And we've also talked to the Westwood Park neighbors. And what we've done is we have made a more modest connection to Westwood Park so that it's not quite as direct, and it maintains a bit of the intimacy of the Westwood Park neighborhood. And we've also adjusted the connection on the east side, on Lee Avenue, to conform to the Performing Arts Center. And we've kind of woven our plan into their plan. And so that axis is much less of a major organizer now. And so, in general, what that means is that the open space changes from an east-west orientation to a north-south orientation. And the size of that park, if we look at the dimensions on the left, it's a 2-acre open space, and it's about 160 feet wide, and it's about 600 feet long. And if we were to take the outline of that park and overlay it onto Sunnyside Park, you can see that it's almost exactly the same size. It's just a little bit smaller. Here is an image of Sunnyside Park, just so everyone can be reminded about the general scale and layout of that park. If we did that same exercise with South Park, we take the outline of our new configuration, which is shown with the red dotted line, and we lay it over South Park, which I think most of you can visualize, the open space would take up the entire space from building face to building face. So in this view, not only the central part would be green, but it would be green all the way out to the very face of the buildings. And the park that's being proposed is about 2.5 times as big as the green area of South Park. So when we roll all these considerations together, we have a scheme which is very, very similar and recognizable from what we presented many months ago, but it's been kind of fine-tuned, and it does have some environmental benefits as well. What we have determined in looking at the wind situation, and we know that that's a really big issue to the community, and we also, as a design team, experienced the conditions on the site during the park day when it was very windy and cold. We've compared the wind situation, and on the left is the previous park configuration, and the light blue is very low wind speeds, and the dark purple is high wind speeds. So in the previous park configuration, you can see that the main open space can get very, very windy at times. And in the new configuration, on the right, that light blue area, the whole top two-thirds or three-quarters of the park is free of strong winds, and that's in part due to the fact that we've kind of narrowed down the connection to Westwood Park. So the buildings are blocking the wind, and they're lifting the wind over the site. In terms of sun orientation, this is the previous configuration that we had. The park always had sun all year round. But if you look at the new north-south configuration, the entire top two-thirds of the park or more would be in the sun all right through the winter. So it actually is a little better, actually quite a bit better for solar orientation as well. So if we take that, that new shape, and we start to think about how we would organize the programs, we've just started to think about that. And this drawing, there's actually a lot of information here, and this is going to be online, so I don't want to try to go through every single element that's up there. But in general, those dark green areas mark four planted entry points to the site. And where there's a crossing of circulation, there's a big multi-purpose lawn. That kind of orange area at the top is a playground, which is between parcels E and F. That's the two of the affordable housing buildings. And the hatched areas are identifying ground floor uses in the buildings that would be public or semi-public that would open directly to the park, like community rooms, fitness center, amenity spaces, childcare, etc. So one of the other benefits of this plan, we think, is that the park is quite wide at the north, and it opens to North Street, and North Street connects to the east, which makes a much better pedestrian connection to Sunnyside. So anyone coming down Lee Avenue on foot or west on North Street on foot can easily get into the park and walk straight through the Brighton Paseo to Ocean Avenue. And then one other thought is just the way the buildings are developing. In this scheme, there's more variation in building form in terms of the shape of those buildings. And then we've also just quieted down the geometry a little bit so that the buildings are more orthogonal and there's less geometries, less angular buildings introduced into the site. So there will be an opportunity for questions, but this is a good segue to Karen Murray, who's going to talk about the building massing. And I'll just conclude with this image from Park Day. This is looking north through that that northern park space with Mount Davidson in the background.
Get up here.
Hi, I'm Karen Murray from Van Meter Williams Pollock, one of the master plan architects for the site. So we'll be showing tonight building massing updates. We can go to the next slide. We've spent a lot of time this summer, as Gary just went through, getting the open space right. And it's really the arrangement of the buildings and the relationship to the open space are really fundamental to the success of this project we see. But now that we've been talking in 2D and showing you this 2D for a long time, we want to show you a 3D. But what we'll be showing you is really the massing. We're starting off with the massing of the buildings. We've just kind of settled down this open space, if you will, and now we're starting to look at the buildings and how these buildings fit onto the site. So we want to just to clarify what we're talking about here, that the massing, defining the massing model versus really the architectural design, and that the massing model is what really we'll be talking about tonight. Showing the general height, the size of the buildings, thinking about how the units will fit into those buildings, and how the buildings fit around the site, as opposed to the architectural model, which will come, but we're not there yet because we really wanted to make sure we got the space right. So the massing you'll see tonight is big and blocky, really looking at how these units fit into the site, not the finished product, not the architecture. And talking about the process, so looking at the massing, this is what we're doing now, like step number one there, ensuring that the program fits into the site, looking at the dimensions of the buildings and the relationships to the open space. The next stage, we'll be looking at articulation. So we'll be looking at important elements of the buildings, you know, roof forms, how we break down these blocky masses into starting to look like real buildings, and then the concept architecture, or the thinking about the architecture, looking at the materials and stylistic directions, they'll come after. So tonight, we're looking at the massing. And we wanted to walk you through what we had for the original proposal. So this is kind of how we started with the original proposal, looking at this massing. So big and blocky, looking at the buildings, how the buildings step in certain ways, how they accommodate the program, how they relate to the open space. So if you go to the next one, it's a similar view, but starting to add this articulation, looking, how open spaces relate to public spaces, looking at roof forms, looking at stepping, and we can continue on, and leading to the more defined architecture of what we put in the proposal. So that's looking at materials, more specifics about how the buildings are designed. So that's the process that we're going through right now, and we'll get here again. Just took a step back to make sure that we had everything right on the site. So this is what we have as the massing model currently. This is looking at our base plan of 1,100 units. And thinking about how these buildings step with the park and the relationships to adjacencies, just wanted to kind of walk around the site to orient everyone, and then we'll walk through how they're working. So if we start at City College, to the east there, we're showing the PAEC in the location that it's planned for now, so you can see how that relates to the site. At the top corner, there's Ocean Avenue at the right, Westwood Park down here on the lower corner, and Reardon High School on the left side. So that's the site. And if we just talk about heights and massing and how it relates to the existing community, we've got Westwood Park at 1 to 2 stories, the single family homes on the west side. Reardon is 2 to 3 stories. It's about 30 to 45 feet tall. City College, the MUB that we're in right now, is 55 feet tall and 3 stories, which is, you can see, it's a taller height. Residential stories are lower. It's the same height as the Ocean Avenue buildings. So just to get everyone understanding the context. Then when we look at the Performing Arts Center, that will have, it'll be up to 3 stories tall. There'll be an 85-story theater space that will be on axis with the stairs that come down from the science building.
85 feet.
I'm sorry, 85 feet, forgive me. Yes. And so when we start to look at our site, we're moving from the west, 2 to 3 stories closest to the single family home. So we've got 2 stories right adjacent to Westwood Park, stepping up to 3 stories as we get to our, what we call West Street. Across West Street, We're moving from four stories at the edge up to some portions of six stories, five and six story buildings, as we move further east and up against the park. And then closest to City College, along Lee, we've got six and seven stories. So this is the way our massing's stepping up now. So we've heard from you all for a really long time that you wanted to see the way the development looked from certain views around the neighborhood. So we went and took photographs from various points, and these aren't the only ones we can do. If there are more that we've missed, that let us know. But we'll start here. So this is the view from the science building at City College, looking down the stairs at the parking lots and to the west.
This says Cloud, so you might want to
okay.
tell everybody.
Okay, Cloud,
yeah.
Cloud Hall
it's
or
not
Science
Cloud Hall.
Okay.
It's the
science building.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll correct that. So looking to the west, this is the PAEC looking at that 85-foot proscenium at the theater, and then the three-story element heading to the north. You can see Reardon to the north and a little corner of the mixed-use building here. And then you have that gap, which will be a walkway between them. And then our site rising behind the Performing Arts Center. That's the seven-story building on Lee Street, and stepping down to 76 stories behind that. There's our building alone, just so you can see that. We're not trying to hide it. The next view is from Unity Plaza, looking to the northwest. So here's the current view from Unity Plaza. There's the Performing Arts Center when it's in place. And there's across Lee Street, they'll be across the street from each other, the new buildings in our development. And you can see on the little key plan on the right side which buildings we're trying to color code them. So the pink is the pink you see in the view there. Purple is the building at the edge there. So we're kind of going clockwise around the site just to keep everyone oriented. This is further up Lee. Up a hill, looking back down to the site. You can see Reardon in the background there, and the buildings that along Ocean Avenue in the foreground. So there's the Performing Arts Center and the new development across Lee. Lee, if in the plan, the way Lee enters the site, it actually bends as it comes onto the site, so it's not a clean, straight line. So those buildings, as you make that turn, the building A in the key plan there, and C, you'll see them at the end of that Lee Avenue axis. Here's the view from San Ramon. This is the existing condition looking at the berm. This is the condition, and it's a little bit misleading just because all the buildings in elevation, you're not seeing the perspective as well. There's the two-story elements right behind the existing homes. Behind that, a little bit lighter orange, are the townhouses, the three-story townhouses, so stepping back. The yellow and blue buildings behind are across West Street, and they're about 200 feet away from that property line. And stepping back as you cross the street. The next view is from up on Monterey, looking down into the site. So there's the view. You can see the mixed-use building in the parking lot down there. And this is the development kind of filling that valley. The building you're looking at is five stories adjacent to Reardon. Stepping up outside of the picture, so it's four or five stories along the edge, on the western edge. This one is up from Genesee, and the view is far away in this one, and we drove around Sunnyside trying to find a good view, and if that we could find from the street that was up high enough that could actually see the site. And if there's a better view that a Sunnyside resident knows of, let us know and we'll go out there and we'll take a picture and we'll do the rendering. This is looking down, and then you can see in the background there the Performing Arts Center and the other our buildings on our site. So hope that kind of describes the site from looking around. And if there really if there are any other sites that or places you want to take a look from, we're happy to do that. So just wanted to go over our process again now that we've been that through looking at the views. We are in this first stage, the massing stage of our design process. Settle down the open space, settle down the design of the site, and are now starting to figure out how these buildings fit on the site with our 1,100 unit program. We'll come back, you know, through our design process, we'll look at the articulation, look at how these masses break down, look at how to get more defined shapes and how these buildings relate back to the site, and then come back with stylistic direction, materials, details, starting to develop that architecture. So this is our process that we'll be going through in the next couple months. So back, just bringing it back so we can look at the buildings in this view again. Going from two stories up to three at the street to four, five, you know, six, and seven closest to Lee Avenue and City College. We've heard from you, and we agree that we want this neighborhood to have a distinctive character, as the neighborhoods around here do. We care and think it's very important to get it right. We're looking at the relationship of the buildings to the open space and the relationship of the building to the neighbors. We've gotten a lot of great comments on that this was our existing neighborhood slide. We had a slide of... These were from the open house back in April, the community open house slide on more recent architecture, various places around the city that got had a lot of great comments too. So we are listening to that. And as we develop the architecture and the articulation, we'll be revisiting these comments and coming back to you with that, a preview of that hopefully at the December meeting. So, and with that, we'll open up the floor to comments on the open space and the massing that you've seen, and we're here. Oh, sorry.
Before we open it up, do you want to see a seat comment?
Yeah, okay. We're going to just go around starting that end.
Okay, I think I've already said what I need to say. I think some people in Sunnyside are concerned about the height, especially with the additional housing option right next to Reardon. That's a kind of cliff of building that hits you if you're coming from that end, that the step down is only from west to east, mm-hmm. or east to west, mm-hmm. and not toward the north. Reardon is only two or three stories. Mm-hmm. The athletic field is zero stories, and you've got a seven-story building right next to it.
Right, so we do have a step down there, and I'm sorry if it wasn't clear in our diagram, but we're here at the green building G. So we are stepping down to five and four stories there, and the seven-story portion is just up on the there. So, but we are, thank you, and we're trying to consider that as well. I'm sorry, the flow went that way, but didn't specify that. I appreciate it.
It still looks like that's what you get on our end. Mm-hmm. I mean, seven stories on
the northeast corner. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Possibly 8 because of the additional housing option. Adding an extra story, basically it looks like an extra mm-hmm. story everywhere.
Not everywhere. Okay. Right. That's, this is our base preferred option, so.
And 2 comments. First of all, I want to commend you, particularly in the park, of actually plotting on the site what the proposed park would look like. The painted the concrete green and, you know, having that northwest or north-south orientation, I think is a big improvement over the original design. And I don't think it was until you actually put it on the site that we could see, oh, there's the wind here, and there's this, and this is going to be a big exposed area. So I commend that process that brought us to these changes. With regard to the massing, one of the things that's always disturbing when you see these drawings, they just look like blocks.
Right.
And I'm sure we're all going to be very interested in the articulation and how we're not going to have any slab sides. Because what we have at the back of Avalon Bay, as you look at it right over here, it's kind of a slab side, looks like the blocks in these drawings. So I hope that we are not going to be blind to that and move through this process and start doing the articulation mm-hmm. on the massing.
Okay.
It made me really happy to see different designs that were up there of the housing. And I think that however big this development gets, you really have an opportunity to take some of the architecture from Westwood Park, such as craftsman-style bungalows, Greek Revival, Spanish Mediterranean. And I would hope that you would include some of that in this development, because in my personal opinion, the developments that we already have here on Ocean Avenue are unoriginal, boxy, and ugly. And that you can quote me on that.
I'm kind of interested in the public space, because that's what everybody here, nobody here is going to be living in these buildings, but they're going to be looking at them and they're going to be using the public space. And for me, the public realm sort of shows us where we are as a culture, really. You know, are we people or are we like ants, we termites? So we want to have like a civic design, something that really gives us a sense of place. It needs to be a dignified place. It's worth caring about. And so we want to feel like people, even though it's a moderately dense place. The public space, the park, the walkways, the streets are all defined by the buildings. So I want to see buildings that have an active space. I see that too on the top. I haven't seen this latest iteration of this map,
mm-hmm.
but I like having community rooms and open and public rooms and actual a good transition between the private and public in the buildings where they connect with the park and also with the streets. I like to see them built right up to the street and not have a big setback.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have real sidewalks where people look out their window and they see people walking by. They can see their neighbors. I want to see porches, and you know, this is not what we're seeing in here because we're not at that stage yet. I understand that. The nice thing about Unity Plaza that everybody loves about it, people were very trepidatious about it when it was first being planned, but when I think made it a success is that the entrance of the building enters on into the plaza. And I really like the idea that that it's their front yard. And so I would like this to be considered a front yard. I'm skipping all over the place, but I hope that the garages, we're saying that they're gonna be underground, but various places around the city, you look at the church on Valencia and 24th, Bethel, and there's some buildings on Hop Street in the Mission, where you walk by on the street and there's nothing on the building. It's just a big flat wall, and then there's a chain link fence, and you look inside and there's cars parked. That's really what that's what I fear the most. I would really like to see if there's a garage that it's encased in some kind of use of some sort that, that's public, that people can interact with in some way. Even if they don't live there, they can still see in or be part of it. Also, the architecture, I liked what was said earlier about the various different kinds of architecture that, that blend in with the neighborhood. And it's a challenge for you that we're building a neighborhood and not just a housing development. So I would like to see more, I'd like to see at least four different kinds of architecture, if that's possible. Different kinds of materials, different styles, and craftsmen, and various different things that, I know we can't build a craftsman building, but something that pays an homage to it at least, and has, so that we can have some fine granularity in the neighborhood that isn't just one big set of blocks. And the I guess when you built the Whole Foods building, it was never really considered that we would actually see it from this angle. So I would like to see something done about that somehow. I don't know what we can do, mural or, you know, Ivy just doesn't do it. Ivy doesn't fix it. So we have to figure something out. I'd like to see that mistake not get repeated if possible. So I think I'm ready to shut up.
Okay. Great. And I can just, for some of your comments, a lot of those elements will be incorporated into our design standards and guidelines. So if there is a garage, we can say it needs to be lined by an active use, that ground floors need to relate to the open spaces. So all of those kinds of things are things we'll be writing in to the guidelines as we're working on them.
They're all in the parameters as well.
Right, yes. That we're. Mm-hmm.
So
I
guess
we'll
go one more. Oh, wait, hold on.
I just wanted to ask if it's possible to get maybe a representation from Reardon High School, because I've heard some concerns about this space, but I've never seen anybody here from Reardon, so I just would love to know what their thoughts are with the stories being so high.
Nobody wants to speak? That would be a first.
Oh,
again, 2 minutes. I appreciate the people that kept it under 2 minutes before.
Just some comments and questions, perhaps. that north roadway, I'm on the facilities committee at City College. It's a big committee. It's multi folks on it. We've barely seen that concept. We certainly haven't voted on it. And it replaces something, as I said, the college is very dense, and for many decades, that particular space to the north of the PAC was a combination media STEM building, partially approved by the state. We have to deal with that. Obviously, that's not your issue. But it startles me to see it on your map, because we're just beginning to discuss that particular configuration across the north of the PAC. Also, I've worked on the PAC for 30 years, and the particular design for 20. We're not a three-story building. We used to have a basement, sort of, but it's underneath this building. The PAC exists. The basement is underneath this building, which never had a basement. So I'll have to talk to our folks who aren't here as to how you're calling it a three-story building. Yeah. I have a question about Lee Street. It's emerged again. We have had bicycle markings along there for the college. Perhaps Frida Kahlo Way could go back to being a drive, instead of two-way, four-way, which it always was. So perhaps in that discussion of Lee Street, and I hope it's your 17 acres and not ours, because again, we're terribly dense at the college, not dense personally, but densely packed, and we have more and more students coming in, and it's going to just get more that way. So the questions I have is, or at least we'll be looking more closely at the Lee Street idea, the North Street idea, the PAC idea. I'm not sure that the wing space is in fact 80 some feet. I'll check it out with the drama department. That's their area. And we have a lot of public spaces.
Steve Martin Pinto, Sunnyside. With regard to the townhomes, I'd like to see them actually be detached. I think that would be more respectful of the Sunnyside and Westwood Park neighborhoods. I really like the comment about the architecture. I think if you want to get people to be more amenable to this project, you have to make it look good. And I think the architecture is key. I think varying the architecture of the townhomes and the buildings themselves is a great idea. As far as making the homes detached, if you give people sizable yards, front, back, and side, that really activates a sense of community with your neighbor. And I think that's a critical thing that needs to be considered.
Hi, Jennifer from Sunnyside. Just glad to hear that the blocks are not what's going to be there. And I wonder, one of the things about Unity Plaza that I thought was really beautiful was the ground. It's made into an art form with the glass. And if that could be done also on the sidewalks of Lee Avenue, it makes it such a more attractive place for people, because a lot of bikes and a lot of people will be walking on their sidewalks. It would be really nice to have something like that. And lots of art. I don't know how you do that, but it would be great. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Michael Howley. I live up the hill in Ingleside. I've been here in the city for about 7 years now. And the entire time that I've lived here, done two things. Lived in the same place up the hill and worked the same job as an air quality consultant on similar EIRs as this. So when I first heard about this development, I was really excited about it because I've seen the scope of other housing projects in the city, so I've seen the work that I've gotten to do on them. And I'm honestly kind of seeing these diagrams, and I'm fairly surprised at how well the project situates in the landscape. For the number of units, I thought it would be taller, more visible, and I'm really impressed with the scope of these diagrams. I heard some scoffing in the room at some of the views, and I have to say, from where I've lived up on the hill, this project is almost invisible compared to what I thought it would be. Some of those views, the buildings don't even peek over the tree lines, don't peek over the existing buildings, and I think we're actually really fortunate that we can put in this density of housing and not have it that obstructive. And I'm wondering for public education purposes, if it would be possible to release these block diagrams as, say, a Google Earth KML layer, so people can kind of explore what it looks like from the neighborhood. Keeping in mind that obviously when the buildings go in, they're not gonna be, you know, neon pink and purple. I think they're gonna blend in a lot better than some people are expecting them to. So thanks for your guys' work, and thanks for all your time.
Hello again, Chris Hansen. So this is different than what is in the NOP, the variances that are in the NOP, because the access road in the NOP is the one that's on the top by Reardon that is the access right now to the parking lot. It does mention that that there's a discussion about access in your variances, but it describes the access the way, not as it is described here. I went to the facility master plan discussion at the facilities committee meeting a while back, and someone asked when do city agencies give input into City College's master planning process? And the fella from Kitchell and Dr. Smith both right away said they give the input at the public comment section, except that's a part of the facility master planning process. And why is it there now when the facilities committee and the process to create the facility master plan has not even gone to a public comment process to put that in there? Thank you.
I can just respond to that a little bit. That in our NOP, we do show both locations of that North Street there, the north end that, and it's obviously not set in stone, and it's a suggestion for continuing the road and connecting out to Phelan, so, and Frida Kahlo. So, not final. This is still a draft plan, and we'll be working on it with input from the community.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and we'll study both, exactly, right.
Laura Fry, Westwood Park. The north side configuration, if it helps with the wind, that'd be absolutely great. That was a good thing, it looks like. I went to the open house about the open space and park day, and I was very concerned that the presentation... Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. I was very concerned that the presentation was geared toward program spaces. And I mentioned this to the people around, and they said, well, you know, that's what people want. I'm like, well, the citywide survey, which I'll pass around... Oh, did I touch something?
I don't know.
Just...
I
don't
think so.
Sorry. Well, I don't think we don't need the...
Actually, we do need it.
Oh,
you wanted to show something.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Who knows this?
I just stepped over here.
I don't think you stepped on anything.
Okay. Anyway, the program spaces, the citywide survey they have passed around. I'm sorry that it's a little hard to...
We're going to let it stop, and then we'll push the button. There.
That it... that it's hard to read the results, but it was like 25-24% of the citywide survey said they wanted large open space, not programmable open space. They had many, many options for programmable open space, and that's not what was voted for. They wanted something like walking in Golden Gate Park, where you actually have space. And when you see the picture, the beautiful drawing of the development, the actual lawn is really, really small. I mean, it's not much true open space. It's all broken up. And some of that's good for the apartments, but that doesn't really create a park for the community. And since this is a public land, it seems like having some kind of actual park was part of the goal, not to have this little itsy-bitsy lawn. And then...
I'll give you like 10 more seconds.
Okay. Again, I wanted to mention that the density goes up much faster than the parameters said. And then also maybe put up some story poles to give the neighbors, because we talked about this before, and I think planning even talked that they were going to do it, to see exactly what kind of height we're talking about. Because with the reservoir, you don't know exactly, because the reservoir is deep, but I mean, if you had a story pole, you know, a modest one. I know story poles, I would imagine story poles aren't easy, but, you know, to just give us some kind of idea. Thank you.
Hi, Jerry Bailey, Sunnyside again. There were some questions about, basic questions that we might have forgotten, or maybe it's changed, but people were wondering, is this a condo, or are these, is it a mix of condo and rentals? I'm also wondering, what is the neighborhood? You know, is this a new, unique neighborhood that is just its own, just part of Westwood? It doesn't seem like it's fitting in any of the existing neighborhood boundaries. And I'm sure that there are ramifications I know nothing about, but I am curious about that. Somebody mentioned a modest access to Westwood. One of the things that came up earlier was it'd be nice to connect Sunnyside with Westwood and the library and... if you're going that direction, but I can also imagine people in Westwood don't want pedestrians going through because then that opens up parking hassles, which we already have in Sunnyside. So it's probably a bit of a hot topic issue, but I'd really like to know what the plan is and I guess if it's changing, why. And then I just want to echo what somebody else said. There's with the introduction of bike lanes on Lee, and so many more people, I am a strong advocate of returning what was formerly known as Phelan Avenue back to a four-lane road. Thank you.
Hello, this is Jonathan again. I just wanted to say I like the access on San Ramon to give bicyclists an alternative to ocean, and I hope it stays. Thank you.
So just to clarify, the unit... for sale, the townhouses will be for sale, so that those will be ownership. There's about 100 of those. And the remainder, the 1,000 units left, will be split
between market rate and affordable apartments, rentals.
Except for a few Habitat for Humanity.
Oh, I'm sorry, right, there's some, right, Habitat.
A couple of brief things. I'll just, as far as the connection to Westwood Park, that's a pedestrian connection. We've never seriously considered any kind of auto connection there. And it is narrower than it was in the previous scheme. So it is open to pedestrians, but it's not a major thoroughfare. And then the other comment about the open space, I really appreciate. We have a lot of people saying they would like to have open space in Habitat, and others talking more about active recreation, and I think that's just something that we need to sort out and continue the dialogue on that.
Were there any questions that were, we have a few minutes, if you want to answer any of the questions that were asked.
I read that they want to put commercial space into it again. Is that now outdated, or is it in and completely?
The plan from the beginning was that there would be a small commercial space. So something.
We have so much open stores on Ocean Avenue, and we wanted to focus the commercial space on Ocean.
Absolutely, we agree. I think that the size that, and again, this is just the analysis stage. It's just to understand the impacts. But the assumption for the analysis is something small, like a very small cafe. The intention is not to compete with what's on Ocean Avenue, but something that serves the neighbors directly that they can't get or would walk to Ocean Avenue to get. I mean, if we can all just keep drinking more coffee. Yeah. So I think...
I was going to add to that and say, sure. I think Jeremy, you covered it. We asked to say put a small commercial space in there for the study, just because if we find out we want to add a cafe or we want to work with City College and have some City College commercial space like the Papusa place right here, we wanted to have that option and not have to do a whole new study. But our plan right now is not have any commercial space. Like there's not, in the drawings that Karen showed, there's nothing identified as commercial space.
Mm-hmm.
So the quick intent was just to, for me, representative of the planning department, just to address some of the questions that we can address quickly from today, since we have a few extra minutes, but I don't know if we have full time for a back and forth Q&A, but there will be general public comment right after I'm done. So I just wanted to address a couple of things. In all the variants that are being studied, remember the table that Josh showed up? There, Josh mentioned the cumulative conditions. There's an assumption that there will be parking on the City College campus. We know that the facilities master plan is in progress, so that has not been pinned down how much parking or where it will be. But I think, as is written in the parameters, our intent, the city's intention, is to work with City College to meet the parking demand for students and employees. So there isn't a real difference between the variation between the variants in that respect. They all assume parking on City College. The only difference is that with the developer proposed variant, there's a public garage on this site, on the 17-acre PUC owned site. So that's the main difference. I think, Steve, I don't know if you had asked if some of the housing on City College, so it's the same answer. We're hoping to get the latest and greatest facilities master plan draft that the committee and the board feels comfortable with. We won't go forward with anything that the City College is not comfortable with. But I think it's, for the purposes of analysis, it's really useful to have some housing and to get that draft in there so we can understand the effects. Those are the main big questions. There was also a question about the special use district, which is mentioned in the notice that went out last week. And on October 30th, we can discuss this at greater length. But the short of it is, a special use district is a zoning mechanism that allows. Let's just say they're all over the city. There's underlying zoning for every parcel in the city, but sometimes there are special districts that are designed for a specific intent. In some cases, it's an arts district, they want to become an SUD, that that is committed to local arts. Other have constraints on certain kinds of building uses, restaurants or liquor establishments. In the case of development agreements, where multiple buildings are being built at once, like the reservoir, and there is a specific intent that's unique to this site. There are a lot of things that are unique to this site. Then a special use district is used to codify those things over the zoning that will assume for each building. So we don't know what the SUD is going to say yet, but the point is that that'll be one of the mechanisms over zoning by which we meet many of the special goals and the principles and parameters. Those are kind of the quick answers. I know there were a lot of questions. Tom and I took them all down. So those that are related specifically to the NOP or the EIR, we will make sure we address on October 30th. And if you're not satisfied with that or you really want an answer, Jeannie, whose email was up there a minute ago, is also in the NOP. She can answer any questions about the environmental process at any time in the next 30 days about that scope.
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
Okay. Who's going to own the streets and sidewalks of the Balboa Reservoir project?
The current operating assumption is that the main roads, sorry, it's hard without a drawing, but if you can imagine the sideways U, the north, south, and west streets would be owned by the city. And then the smaller streets that serve buildings would meet certain standards for public access, but they would be owned by the development entity, developer. That's the current assumption.
Okay, is there anybody who wants to say anything about anything that was not on the agenda until now? Eric.
General public comments.
2 minutes.
Harry Bernstein, Merced Heights. I meant to underline before what other people had said, the criticism that there's been plenty of criticisms of the development over the last several years. The fact that none of them are in the permanent record is really disturbing, and it's up to the residents, the college community, and other activists to reintroduce them into the record. Now, to another topic. The previous housing proposal on the Balboa Reservoir site occurred between 1985 and 1989. It was a big giveaway to the developer. What was then the South Balboa Reservoir site was offered to the developer for an unbelievable $36,900. Returning to today, there is no indication what the price of the land will be for the developer. It's still unknown. Avalon Bay is a very wealthy corporation and doesn't deserve any giveaways. Avalon Bay has consistently been pushing for building heights in excess of the parameters that were arranged, worked out by the CAC. Adding insult to injury, Avalon Bay has been forthright in opposing Proposition 10, the revocation of the Costa-Hawkins bill that would give local communities more options on rent control. So I think they are not a friend, and they shouldn't be given special regard. Next.
Miller again. Just one last thing about parking, because I hear it said, what was City College thinking of all these years not having parking garages? Well, since 1958, we've leased the Lower Reservoir for parking. Before that, it was City College land. I mean, it was City College West Campus. So the idea that we wouldn't have this never occurred while we were trying to build stuff for our students. The campus was built for 5,000. And now we have 25,000, heading higher. Saying that we're going to deal with parking structures at City College campus, please. They're going to cost an arm and a leg, what, $50 million each or something, or $200 million. The public pays for that. The state will not pay for parking at community colleges. We have to go for a local bond. So isn't it odd that public land, which is supposed to be for public good, will cost citizens of San Francisco a couple of $100 million to maintain its one and only public college?
Steve Martin Pinto, Sunnyside. Concerning the San Ramon Way entrance, I would consider leaving that open, at least to emergency vehicles such as ambulances, fire trucks, and fire engines and police cars. Your first engine and truck would be from Station 15 at the corner of Ocean and Phelan. However, your second or third would be coming from the north at Station 39, which is over by Monterey, or Mira Loma and Portola. They come from the north via Mira Loma to Plymouth and down that way. And if you cut off that entrance right there, you're going to make them go around to Ocean Avenue. It's going to be a lot more circuitous route. It's going to cost minutes. And with these days, with construction materials being more flammable than ever, those minutes count. So I strongly consider leaving that San Ramon way open. Thank you.
Chris, again, thank you for your patience. The CEQA process we are finally getting to here is a precise legal system. Unfortunately, under CEQA, Public Resources Code Section 21099, Subdivision D1, exempts project parking impacts from CEQA review. In order to challenge a project's inadequate parking provisions, our comments need to focus on submitting evidence of secondary environmental impacts that result to the surrounding area. City College is a part of that surrounding area. The school has consideration under the heading of potential impacts to public services. In order to save City College, a lot of people have had to do a lot of work in a marathon of stressful daily events for a period of 5 years. In the first year of the accreditation crisis, enrollment dropped 14.9%. In that period, in between 2010 and today, 550 jobs at City College were lost, and 439 of these jobs belonged to teachers. City College folks get the need for housing. That's not the issue. The issue is that the lack of consideration for the impact of the changes being proposed will play out, how they will play out in the ability of working students who must drive in order to get between work and school on time, how that plays out. It's also a question of how it will play out in the future health of the school if the situation is created where a lot of the students just simply go away. Please help the school and don't let that happen. Make comments many times. Bye, thanks.
Good evening, this is Jonathan again. I wanted to respond to some of the previous comments about the aesthetics of the buildings. I think the aesthetics are important, but affordability trumps aesthetics. And if people can't afford to live here, then it doesn't really matter whether it looks great or it doesn't look great. You can't build family-sized units you can't build amenities and try to say that it's for families if the families can't actually afford it. That's kind of like cargo cult. It's called doing cargo cult, actions where you're ignoring the most important part of why people can't afford to live here. And to some of the concerns about the developer making a lot of money, I share some of those concerns. However, we can't really address those because we don't know the land cost. That completely determines whether the developer is making a whole lot of money or is making no money at all. So it's not really something that we can, debate about at this point. In the development at the Richmond BART station, one of the developers proposed to, for the BART department to give the developer the land for free in order that they could use that free land to make all affordable housing. So the interaction between the land costs and how much community benefits you get is very important, but not really something that we can fully discuss. Thank you.
Laura Westwood, Northway Westwood Park. I just wanted to make a comment about the San Ramon that in the neighborhood people have talked about forever, just making Plymouth northbound because it sometimes gets so congested and it's a real hazard with emergency vehicles already going north on Plymouth. And so with the development and increased congestion, I would think that that would, that whole idea would be considered even more, that Plymouth would just be northbound. Thank you.
All right, well, that's the end of the meeting. I guess I wanted to say a couple things. I want to thank Josh Slutsky for coming by, the neighborhood. I neglected to thank Norman King, so in his absence, I will say thank you for dropping by, as well as Ruben Smith by giving his update on the master plan. So, thanks for everybody for coming. We all love our neighborhood. We're all here because we don't all disagree with each other, but we all are here because we love our neighborhood and our city. We all have our needs, and so let's continue this civic discussion. It's great to have a civic society, civil society. Thanks. Good night.